the headlines. President Raisi says Iranian armed forces will target, quote, the center of the Zionist regime if it makes the slightest move against Tehran. Swedish police report dozens of injuries during days of violent protests over the burning of the Holy Quran by a far-right anti-Islam group. And Russian President Vladimir Putin says sanctions by Western countries against Russia over Ukraine have led to the deterioration of their own economies. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. Iran's army has held a military parade to mark the National Army Day. The parade, held annually on April 18th, featured the latest indigenously produced military equipment of the army. Addressing the event, Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi said Iranian armed forces will target, quote, the center of the Zionist regime if it makes the slightest move against the Islamic Republic. Yusuf Jalodi has more.
Heavy stomps of marching soldiers and convoys of Iranian-made weapons paraded in Tehran and across the country on the National Army Day. All of the four branches of the military took part in the key parade, held at the presence of army officials and Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi. Addressing the ceremony, the president hailed the army's achievements despite the U.S. sanctions.
The defense industry fared the best amid the sanctions atmosphere. The Islamic Republic's army achieved significant capabilities during this period. Not only did the army defend the nation during the Iraqi imposed war on Iran, but it has stood with the people and for the people in all areas.
The parade featured the latest military achievements and weapons produced by the Iranian army, including radars, tanks, armored vehicles, drones, fighter jets, and missiles. This year's highlights were FAT-360 surface-to-surface missile, Labeg precision strike rockets, and Desfoul and Majid air defense systems. The Islamic Republic says it produces over 80% of its needed military hardware indigenously. In his address to the parade, the Iranian president said the country's show of power sends messages both to friends and enemies.
The preparedness of the army sends the message of hope to the friends of the Islamic Republic. There's also a message to the enemy. The enemy must know that the military might of our armed forces gives us a deterrent power. They must know that the smallest move made against our country and our nation would be monitored by the sharp eyes of our armed forces.
The National Army Day was designated in 1980, following a historic speech by late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini. There, he thanked the army for its role in the victory of the 1979 Islamic Revolution by announcing neutrality in the conflict between the former Pahlavi regime and the revolutionaries.
4 decades of arms embargoes have denied Iran access to even a bullet from other countries. The army says the parade today showed that those bans have not harmed Iran's military capability, but in fact, they've been a blessing, since they prompted Iran to build up its own military arsenal so that its security is no longer tied to foreign arms. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
We were joined by journalist and political analyst Elijah Manier. He said U.S. sanctions imposed on Iran over the past 4 decades have only strengthened the country's military capabilities.
It is true that the U.S. Sanctions started on Iran since 1979 by President Jimmy Carter at the beginning of the Islamic Revolution. What is also true that all these years, I mean more than 40 plus years so far, all these sanctions have strengthened Iran's capability and reliance on itself domestically in rebuilding its strength, its armament, its defense system, and also its local production. If you look at the Iran-Iraq war that was imposed on Iran in the 80s, we realized that Iran had almost nothing at that time and managed throughout the years to build this capability to the point that today we've seen last month, for example, it has bombed the location of the Israeli Mossad in Kurdistan, Iraq. Therefore, it is also standing against the Israelis in the naval battle in different places around the Middle East, imposing deterrence, and all that is due and thanks to the capability that Iran managed to build.
Iran makes further significant progress in developing unmanned aerial vehicles, or UAVs. A domestically built drone has recently passed its flight test and has become fully operational. The UAV named Gaza has been manufactured by the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps and was unveiled last year. It can be used both in reconnaissance and combat missions. The drone is capable of carrying 13 bombs and a payload of 500 kilograms. Gaza has a flight endurance of 35 hours and can fly with a speed of about 350 kilometers per hour. Its flight altitude is also about 35,000 feet, while the operational range is some 2,000 kilometers. Iranian military experts and technicians have managed to develop a wide range of drones in recent years, making the country's armed forces self-sufficient in this arena. Iran says the atmosphere of the Vienna talks is still appropriate for the revival of the 2015 deal known as the JCPOA. The foreign ministry, however, has blamed the United States for delays in reaching an agreement.
The remaining issues between Iran and the United States are more than one. The messages exchanged over the past few weeks via EU Deputy Foreign Policy Chief Enrique Mora before and after his trip to Tehran are far from reaching solutions. The U.S. is responsible for constant delays in making appropriate decisions. A mere reply is not enough. Rather, a bare minimum must be done regarding the two issues. All aspects of the maximum pressure campaign against Iran, which was designed by the administration of former President Donald Trump, must be removed completely. Secondly, the Iranian nation should enjoy the economic benefits of the JCPOA in a completely tangible manner.
Khatibzadeh added that the U.S. has adopted a delaying tactic with regard to the talks. He stressed that there will be no agreement until a comprehensive agreement on all concerning issues is reached. Khatibzadeh said the 2015 deal will not be subject to any changes under a potential new agreement. He also slammed Washington's efforts to interfere in issues related to Iran, saying the release of Iran's frozen assets has nothing to do with any third parties. Khatibzadeh said the Islamic Republic will not allow the U.S. to meddle in such issues. He reiterated that Tehran acts according to the interests of its people. The spokesman also said that the Iranian government has not tied its economic policy to the sanctions removal, but is seeking to neutralize those curves. A Palestinian rights group has urged the United Nations to hold Israel accountable for killing Palestinians in occupied territories.
UN experts and rapporteurs should investigate the Israeli violations and the targeting of Palestinian lives and bring to an end these Israeli practices. They should denounce the targeting and cold-blooded murder of Palestinians, bear their full responsibilities, and put into operation the use of universal jurisdiction mechanisms to achieve international justice, prosecute and hold to account persons charged with committing grave violations of the international humanitarian law.
The group also called on the International Criminal Court to investigate the Israeli violation of Palestinian rights. It accused the regime forces of extrajudicial killing, saying over 40 Palestinians have been killed this year alone. Tensions are running high in the West Bank as the regime has intensified its crackdown. Over the past days, Israeli forces attacked Palestinians across the occupied territories, including in the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex in Al-Quds. Hundreds of people have been injured and detained in Israeli attacks since Friday. Meanwhile, reports say Israeli forces have entered Beit Hanun in the besieged Palestinian territory of the Gaza Strip. We talked to our correspondent in Gaza, Ashraf Shannon, for an update.
Israeli tanks and armored Caterpillar D9 bulldozers made an incursion into the eastern part of the northern Gaza Strip town of Beth Hanun area today. They razed the agricultural land in the area and they fired some shots towards the farmers in the area. This is according to people who live in the area and eyewitnesses in Beth Hanun. This recent Israeli incursion into Gaza comes amid the ongoing attacks against Palestinians, especially in Al-Quds. Some people here believe that this is part of an Israeli provocation towards the Palestinian resistance, possibly trying to have them react to what's happening in Al-Quds and also in Al-Khalil, also known as Hebron. Israeli tanks and bulldozers haven't made such incursions for weeks now.
Swedish police say days of unrest in the country sparked by the burning of the Holy Quran by a far-right group has left dozens injured. According to the police, 26 officers and 14 civilians are among those injured during protests in several cities since Thursday. The unrest triggered by the far-right party has held a rally in a Muslim-dominated area and burnt a copy of the Holy Quran. The party, which is well known for its anti-immigrant and anti-Islam stances, is intending to mobilize support ahead of the September elections. Its leader has been visiting cities and towns with large Muslim populations to divide the communities. Tensions continue to mount as there was another plan by a group to publicly burn copies of the Holy Quran. Police say those who commit violence are criminals with no links to the demonstrations.
Scuffles and unrest were reported in several spots across Sweden. Fierce clashes have broken out between police and protesters during demonstrations against a far-right group's intention to burn the Holy Quran. Violent skirmishes erupted between supporters of the Strom Kurs party and the opponents of the blasphemous plan. Clashes and demonstrations have been held in a couple of cities. Over a dozen police officers have also been injured since the unrest started. Meanwhile, police has backed the hardline party's plan, saying it would not revoke permission for a demonstration organized by the party, because this free speech threshold for doing that is very high in Sweden. That's why there have been reported clashes in locations that the hardline party either had planned or had demonstrations. Also, Swedish Prime Minister Magdalena Andersson came out in support of the far-right group, making remarks that have been deemed provocative. She said in Sweden, people are allowed to express their opinions, whether they are in good or bad taste. That is part of our democracy.
This has nothing to do with free speech. In reality, this has to do with trying to get people's attention away from real problems by blaming everything on immigrants, blaming everything on Muslims, blaming everything on people who are not white. And this is something that it's very difficult to campaign against when these forms of racism and these forms of Islamophobia are protected by the quote-unquote right on free speech. And this is what we're seeing now.
These remarks only fanned the fire of unrest across the country and drew condemnations from the Muslim world, like from Iran. Iran summoned the Swedish envoy and condemned the desecration of the Holy Quran, saying the blasphemy was committed under the protection of the Swedish police. Tehran said it would hold the Swedish government as accountable and expects an immediate reaction from Stockholm against the perpetrator, as well as practical measures to prevent such incidents. On Thursday, the hardline party held a rally in a heavily Muslim-populated area in Sweden. At the demonstration, the party leader burned a copy of the Holy Quran, ignoring objections from onlookers. Counter-protests broke out with demonstrators setting fire to security vehicles after police ignored calls to stop the far-right demonstration. Strom Kurs is well known for its anti-immigrant and anti-Islam stances.
Instances of assaulting Islam, whether through officials or through publications, is rife in Europe. Take, for instance, the great Wilders, a Dutch politician who has made no bones about his hatred for Islam. Even French President Emmanuel Macron has publicly stated that he wants to reform Islam. And no one can forget the blasphemous cartoons by Charlie Hebdo magazine depicting the Prophet Muhammad in a vulgar manner. And all of this under the guise of freedom of expression. Moving on, Russia says it has destroyed hundreds more Ukrainian military targets as the war between the two neighbors is inching closer to its third month.
Russian artillery units during the night attacked 315 objects of the Ukrainian troops, 18 command posts, 22 artillery batteries, an OSA AKM anti-aircraft missile system, as well as 275 enemy strongholds and areas of concentration of manpower were destroyed.
The Russian Defense Ministry says different Ukrainian regions, including Kharkiv and Donetsk, were the target of the attacks. The eastern Luhansk region, local authorities say, Russia has now taken control of the town of Kremena. Moscow is also pushing its offensive to take control of the strategic port city of Mariupol. The Russian military claims it has already taken all urban areas of the besieged city. Meanwhile, the spokesman for the Ukrainian Defense Ministry says Russia is preparing to create a corridor with Crimea that declared its independence in 2014.
The occupant prepares for an offensive in eastern Ukraine in order to establish full control over the territory of Donetsk and Luhansk regions and to ensure the sustainability of a land corridor with the occupied territory of the Autonomous Republic of Crimea. The aggressor has now almost completed regrouping troops for an offensive in the eastern operating zone. The strengthening of the offensive grouping is implemented through the deployment of additional Russian units.
In western Ukraine, the mayor of the city of Lviv has confirmed the death of seven people in a Russian missile strike. Kharkiv local authorities say three more people died in Russian shelling of the city. Meanwhile, Ukrainians continue to flee their country. The UN Refugee Agency says nearly 5 million people have already fled the country. The UN has warned that women and children fleeing the war zone are more vulnerable to exploitation. And Russia's president has once again deplored the West for imposing sanctions on its country over its military operation in Ukraine. During a cabinet meeting, Vladimir Putin said the sanctions by Western countries have led to the deterioration of their own economies. He noted that Russia withstood unprecedented sanctions pressure. He also underlined that the measures taken by those countries were to target Russia's economy and provoke panic in the markets and cause the banking system to collapse. However, he said the situation has been stabilizing and after a short hype, demand in the Russian Federation has returned to normal. The West has slapped a wave of sanctions on Moscow, targeting elites, officials and entities, as well as excluding several Russian banks from the SWIFT payment system. Western countries have also expelled dozens of Russian diplomats on alleged spying charges. And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Ramadan, the month of opportunities. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam and welcome to the program. We have been fasting for some 2 weeks. By the way, we have tasted the sweetness of worship. One of the factors that prevent tasting the sweetness is the right of people. There are three rights in Islam: the right of the self, the right of God, and the right of people. The right of the self means we are not allowed to wrong ourselves by wasting the lifetime. We should use the talents that God has gifted us correctly. If we do not fulfill the right of the self, we can compensate it by repenting. The right of God includes acts like daily ritual prayers, fasting, and other obligatory acts, and also refraining from forbidden acts. There are many narrations that God will pardon his right if the individual repents honestly and does not have time to compensate. But the right of people is very important in Islam, and one cannot get rid of them by mere repenting. Part of this right includes financial issues, while the other part includes spiritual issues such as dignity and honor of individuals. This right should be compensated exactly as it has been violated. In other words, God will never forgive the violated right of people unless we get back the money that we owe to somebody or retaliate for defaming an individual. The right of people is so important that if we are indebted to someone and he demands it while we are in daily ritual prayer, we have to stop the prayer and spend his debt and then continue the prayer. 1,400 years ago, Imam Sajjad, peace upon him, son of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, has mentioned the rights of everything and everyone which should be observed by the faithful. Without observing these rights, we cannot taste the sweetness of worship, and consequently, we won't reach high degrees of servitude of God. Undoubtedly, the Prophet and his progeny, the Ahlul Bayt, are the best role models for mankind. Familiarity with their characteristics and pondering over their practice and behavior demonstrates the sublime and purposeful life. Imam Hassan, peace upon him, was asked on the reason of prescribing fasting. The Imam answered, "God has prescribed fasting in order that the rich taste hunger and spend the surplus of their wealth to the poor." Imam Hassan, peace upon him, was very kind and forgiving. One day a man had come to Medina from Syria. He found Imam Hassan and started insulting the Imam as a result of negative propaganda of the Umayyad rulers that had spread across Syria. When he got tired of insulting, Imam Hassan, peace upon him, cast him an affectionate look and, after reciting a few ayahs on pardoning others, told the man, "O man, we are ready for any kind of service to you." Then the Imam asked him, "Are you from Syria?" The man answered, "Yes." Imam Hassan said, "I know why you have behaved this way, but now that you are lonely in our city, if you need anything, I will help you and I'm ready to receive you at my home." The Syrian man never thought to face such kind of overlooking, so he was changed, as he said, "At that time I wish the ground had swallowed me so that I couldn't have behaved so brazenly. Hassan and his father had been the worst people in my heart, but now I don't love anyone more than them." Now let's let's continue the laws of fasting. One of the things that nullify fasting is ascribing untrue issues and words to God, prophets, and imams. This will nullify fasting both in verbal and written form. Thus, one should be very careful about narrating hadith and words of the prophets and infallible imams. Yet, one can narrate hadith if he's not sure if they are true or not. But it is better to mention the reference. Ascribing untrue narrations and words to jurisprudence and ulema is forbidden and a great sin, but it does not nullify fasting. Another act which nullifies fasting is to dip the head completely in water. If this act is done deliberately, it will nullify fasting. So, if the person is forced to dip his head or he does it out of negligence, his fasting is correct. If he dips half of his head and then dips another half, his fasting is correct. Meanwhile, pouring water on the head with a dish or shower does not nullify fasting. If one doubts that his head was completely dipped in water, his fasting is correct. If he puts the whole head in water unintentionally, he should take it out as soon as he notices.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladheena amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Today we listen to the speech of Hujjatul Islam Salim Yusuf Ali.
The Prophet is reported to have said that every good deed is rewarded at least tenfold. And this is from the Quran. But there are some good deeds which are rewarded up to 700 times. This is part of Allah's fadl, that whatever we do, He rewards even in greater extent. Except for one deed. Illa sabr. The Prophet says, illa sabr. And in, we have a verse in the Quran where Allah says, A'udhu billahi minash shaitan rajim. Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu sta'inu bis sabri was salah, inna allaha ma'as sabirin. O you who believe, seek assistance through sabr and salah. In hadith we're told that sabr there, the most prominent example is a sawm, fasting. So even in this hadith, we're told that a sabr here means fasting. Every good deed is rewarded tenfold up to 700-fold, except for fasting. For that, Allah Himself says, Ana ujzi bihi. I am going to reward that. It is something which is of incredible value. And inshallah, those of us who are able to fast, we want to do so with good intention, and inshallah we can receive that reward. For those who aren't able to fast, inshallah they can compensate by doing other actions, and they can fast with the tongue, they can fast with the body parts, with the fast with the eyes, etc. But what I wanted to mention is one of the secrets of fasting, one of the secrets of the month of Ramadan. And I want to take you to the verse of Surah Al-Fatiha, where we say, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم إياك نعبد إياك نعبد. إياك means you alone. نعبد means we worship. Now you all know that Surah Al-Fatiha is something that if we're reciting our Furada prayers, we have to recite the Surah. So there's one individual who's reciting their Salah and they're saying, Oh Allah, they stand up, Allah is Allahu Akbar, Allah is greater. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, Alhamdulillah, all the way till they say, Iyaka na'budu. You alone do we worship. Why is it that the plural form is used in this sentence right here? Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli in his tafsir, he has a very wonderful explanation of this. He says that there are three levels in which people who offer salah, they offer their salah. Three levels. There's one level where somebody is very self-centered. The whole world revolves around them. And so, naturally, when they say, Iyaka na'abudu, really, they're using the plural form, but they're referring to themselves. And they're making a declaration, oh Allah, I'm standing here, I'm worshipping you, and so on. That's level one. But there's a second level where the worshipper realizes that, wait a minute, I am offering my salah, but there are others who are offering their salah as well. Together, we are worshipping Allah. Everyone has a group of people that they pray with. For example, we have our communities. We gather together, we offer supplications together, and we pray together. And we have some thoughts, we include them in our statements. We work together, we're one unit, one body. But there's a third level, where when somebody says, Iyaka na'abudu, they realize that they're talking about the abd. Now who is the abd? The abd is someone, anyone, or anything other than Allah. And so, when they're saying, Iyaka na'abud, they are melting themselves in the entire creation of Allah, which is the abd, in front of the Rabb. And saying that, I'm not alone. I am, who am I? I'm nothing. I and everything and everyone, we are your servants. We are your slaves. You are the owner. Now perhaps we can take these three levels and look at the act of fasting and examine fasting from each of these three levels as well. There's one level where somebody's fasting is really about themselves and themselves only. And it's very natural. It's very, you know, very, you could say, close to us, which is, you know, our stomach. Okay, we don't have any food in there. So that's what is the focus of our attention. You know, we're occupied with what's happening to that. We're occupied with how we're going to fill that. And we're told in the riwayat of the Ahlul Bayt that woe be to the one whose only thing they get out of the month of Ramadan has to do with their food and their drink and it being there and it not being there. But for some people, that's what it's about. But there's a higher level where somebody realizes that, wait a minute, it's not about me, is it really? In fact, Allah wants to separate me from this food and drink because for many people, that is the biggest idol that they have so that I can realize how much I'm in need of others. And so here you go. You start at the month. It's not just about you. You have to go and see the moon. And then it's a month where you're with the Quran. It's a month where you're with the people that you pray with. You're with your community. You spend time together. You can take care of one another. It becomes a communal affair. You pray together. You start at the month. You communicate with, is it the start of the moon? Is it not start? You work on it together. All the way until the Salatul Eid, which is again a communal affair. You're with the people that you pray with. And you see here that all of this is part of the month of Ramadan. The coming together, the praying, the giving the iftars, the taking care of one another. We're told in riwayah that fasting has this incredible reward. But there are other acts which have even more reward than fasting itself. For example, one of the riwayat from Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam, he says that fitruka li akhika al-muslim wa idkhalu as-sururi alayhi afdalu ajran min sawmik. When you give iftar to your fellow brother and you cause happiness to enter into the hearts, that has more reward than your fasting itself. So you see here within the spirit of the Ahlul Bayt, they say that yeah, fasting is there. But let your fasting be one which allows you to now be concerned with those around you. And that's why the true fast is the one where somebody displays incredible akhlaq with their family in the month of Ramadan. They display incredible generosity. We're told in hadith that Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi was the most generous of people. But in the month of Ramadan, he was even more generous than he was in the rest of the year. This should be the month where we're shining in terms of our relationships with our family, sadaqat al-rahim, our community members, taking care of them, trying to see them, trying to feed them, taking care. And the final level is the one where somebody realizes that they're along with the entirety of Allah's creation. And then they fast along with that, Iyaka na'abud. And then we're told in many riwayat that you're fasting, but realize that there's a purpose behind your fasting. You're fasting so that you can taste and you can realize the experience of those who are deprived and do something about that. You can see how you, what is your program to be able to help others, not just yourself, not just your family, not just your community, but beyond that as well. So these are three levels which inshallah we can consider as we are performing our obligations during this month. We pray that Allah Ta'ala enables us to perform all of our obligations and that He makes this month filled with blessings for us and that He hastens the reappearance of the Imam of our time. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa alihi al-tahirin.
Dear listeners of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, you can follow this program entitled Minbar every day in the month of Ramadan. If you have any suggestion, you can send us your email at englishradio@irib.ir.
Love is everywhere. So much peace fills up the air. Ramadan, month of the Quran. I feel it inside me, strengthening my iman. But how?
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. in the limelight.
In South Africa, a network of researchers are studying whether new lineages BA4 and BA5 escape immunity from COVID-19 vaccines and prior infections. Please stay with us for an article in this regard written by Amy Maxman, writer. This article is published under the heading, Are New Omicron Subvariants a Threat? Here's how scientists are keeping watch. Here's more. The viruses have the attention of the World Health Organization, WHO, because, according to lab studies, their mutations might enable them to evade immunity gained from COVID-19 vaccines or prior infections more strongly than existing versions of Omicron. De Oliveira is clear, however, that he isn't panicked by BA4 and BA5, although the subvariants have rapidly gained ground in South Africa during the past month. Rates of COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations are stable in the country. He is also unruffled because he's been through this before. His team has made similar discoveries during the pandemic and knows the drill. Right now, he says, it's just time to work carefully and diligently, but calmly. Scientists are now studying the subvariants so far detected in 9 countries to determine whether their effect is serious enough to warrant interventions. SARS-CoV-2 will continue to mutate as it evolves, but not every variant will be newsworthy. To determine what merits attention, Wendy Barclay, a virologist at Imperial College London, says that researchers focus on 2 factors. We care about a difference in disease severity, and we care about a variant that evades vaccines. Because even if we have the same severity, an increase in cases still has a big impact on life. At the same time, researchers are grappling with how to communicate their concerns and the uncertainty about variants openly while not provoking unnecessary government policies and anxiety. Late last year, when De Oliveira's team detected the original Omicron, countries including the US and the UK invoked travel bans against South Africa. The bans failed to prevent the variant's spread, but severely damaged the already struggling South African economy. If that happens again, De Oliveira says, I would stop sharing data in real time with the world, but would continue sharing with my government to guide our own response. On April 1st, Edwin Wilkinson, a bioinformation on De Oliveira's team at Stellbach, saw that researchers at the center's lab and at the National Institute for Communicable Diseases in Johannesburg had flagged several abnormal SARS-CoV-2 genome sequences in their latest batch of data. The sequences had a few notable mutations in the region of SARS-CoV-2 that encodes its spike protein. Because the spike protein is key to the virus invading cells, Wilkinson recognized an urgent need to hunt for these mutations in all of the genomes sequenced in the country over the past few months to see if they had skirted by unnoticed. Working through the weekend, he and his colleagues found that they had. A month earlier, during the first week of March, the BA4 and BA5 sequences comprised around 5% of the roughly 500 genomes sequenced in South Africa. By the first week of April, the portion had risen by 50%. That week, an international virus classification group determined that BA4 and BA5 were indeed their own separate lineages on the Omicron family tree and gave them their names. In addition to the accumulating sequences from South Africa, a relatively small number of BA4 sequences have been uploaded to the data platform GISAID from Botswana, Belgium, Denmark, and the UK in the past 2 weeks, and BA5 has shown up from China, France, Germany, and Portugal. One thing that makes BA4 and BA5 stand out to virologists is an amino acid mutation they share called F486V. It is located on the virus's spike protein near where the protein attaches to the ACE2 receptor on cells, an interaction that opens the door to infection. Important antibodies generated in response to COVID-19 vaccines and to prior infections with SARS-CoV-2 neutralize the virus by clinging to this spot. Since last year, virologists began noticing the vulnerability of this spot in lab experiments. For example, virologist Benoor Lee at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai in New York City and his colleagues were helping to vet a promising monoclonal antibody treatment by exposing it to an artificial virus carrying many versions of the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein. Only one version of the spike protein evaded their antibodies. It had a mutation nearly identical to F486V. At the time, Lee was relieved that the mutation was vanishingly rare in real life, struggling that it hindered the virus in some way. Only about 50 of the nearly 10 million SARS-CoV-2 sequences in GISAID contained the mutation. So Lee felt assured that the antibody treatment would still be broadly useful. But with the rapid rise of BA4 and BA5 in South Africa, it seems that the coronavirus has evolved so that the mutation no longer holds it back, Lee explains. Lorenzo Sabisi, a virologist at the WHO, says the agency is tracking the two sub-lineages. But before it draws any conclusion about whether they pose an additional threat compared with other Omicron variants, it needs to learn more from epidemiological studies of people. Immunologists are also approaching the question of immune escape by exposing samples of BA4 and BA5 to blood drawn from people previously infected with SARS-CoV-2 and people who have been vaccinated. Why we straight away gave samples to researchers around the world, the Oliveira team says. That included researchers in South Africa and the UK, as well as those at US National Institutes of Health and Chinese Center for Disease Control and Prevention. Right after identifying BA4 and BA5, the Oliveira also met with South African government and a consortium of about 200 researchers in the country to strategize next steps. With no increase in hospitalizations in South Africa and only about 1,200 cases per day, he advised the government against setting stricter guidances that the country already has. So far, the government hasn't changed its rules. De Oliveira was particularly careful with how he conveyed news of variants to health officials from other countries, asking them to keep watch while not triggering largely futile policies such as travel bans that can cause more harm than good. We have a lot of pressure on us, De Oliveira says. When we reported on Macron, me and my colleagues got death threats. We had to put security in front of the lab. In the face of such tensions, Barclay applauds South Africa's surveillance work and transparency. Although this year's SARS-CoV-2 variants cause, on average, less severe diseases than earlier versions of the virus, she says that's not a sign that the coronavirus will continue to become weaker. In addition to acquiring usual mutations, SARS-CoV-2 can evolve rapidly through recombination, inserting one chunk of a sequence from a variant into the genome of another. If an Omicron variant recombines with a different SARS-CoV-2 variant, it might produce a virus that both evades immunity and makes people sicker, Barclay says. It would be great if these new variants are part of a trend in which the virus is becoming milder, but there is no biological reason to believe that will always be the case.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common. This is the part of a speech delivered on March 10th, 2022 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the chairman and members of the Assembly of Experts. The meeting was held at the end of the ninth session of the Assembly. Everyone should know that the environmental protection is not a formal ceremonial issue. Some people think that the issue of the environment has a ceremonial and peripheral status in the country. This is not the case. Protecting the environment is one of the most fundamental and essential tasks in the country. and for the organizations of the country. A serious issue in protecting the environment is the issue of water and soil. Many people are unaware of the fact that the water and soil are two great sources of national wealth and two vital provisions for all nations. And in all countries in the globe, these sources should not be used extravagantly. Soil should not be destroyed. Therefore, treating water and soil in a wasteful manner should surely work to the disadvantage of national interest. There are many policies and methods for optimal use of water and soil. Experts are aware of these methods. Those who are specialists in these areas should guide and help officials, and officials should pay attention to this matter. Another issue concerning the protection of the environment is the preservation of wildlife. If we are indifferent towards wildlife and the animals which exist throughout the country, in forests, deserts, and plains, this will certainly jeopardize national interest. Illegal hunting should be taken seriously as well. In the whole Islamic Sharia law, hunting is only allowed when it is done with the purpose of providing food. Otherwise, it is not allowed in any way.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Islamic law has not given permission for other kinds of hunting. When you take a look at Islamic law books, they mention that daily prayers conducted on a hunting trip have been done completely, not done in abbreviated form as on normal trips. In other words, such trips are haram. This is what it means. It signifies that this is a wrong task. This point should receive attention. The issue of wildlife is very important. Another point that is also related to the Environment Protection Organization is preventing the utilization of agricultural lands for other purposes. We have heard that in many cases, agricultural lands in the vicinity of cities and in some plains are used for other purposes. This should be stopped because it is surely to the disadvantage of national interest.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.